In 1968, Yasunari Kawabata became the first Japanese writer to receive a Nobel Prize for Literature. The award cited his, quote, narrative mastery, which with great sensibility expresses the essence of the Japanese mind. Since then, however, Kawabata has largely fallen out of the English reading public's attention. For this week's installment of Underappreciated, literary translator, professor, puppeteer, and puppet theater director Martin Holman joins us to discuss the man and his work. Mr. Holman has translated three volumes of Kawabata's books, The Dancing Girl of Izu and Other Stories, Palm of the Hand Stories, and The Old Capital, all published by Counterpoint. I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I'm talking to you from Japan. If we
That's
were doing
right.
this show for Japanese radio, would Kawabata qualify as an underappreciated author?
Well, I don't think so. And actually, as I was waiting here in my hotel room for the phone call, I switched on the TV just to pass some time. And what was on, I found on television was a program in which they were interviewing the director of a new version of one of Kawabata's stories on film. And I was quite surprised. I hadn't heard about it, and I hadn't turned the television on in days because I've been busy, and I switched it on, and who was on but someone who's directing one of Kawabata's works, One Arm, which was from the late 50s, early 60s.
Well, Snow Country, which is considered one of the country's greatest classics, probably has been made into 7 or 8 movies.
Snow Country's been filmed a number of times, and The Dancing Girl of Izu has been filmed more than any. I think there are 8 versions of The Dancing Girl of Izu now. And, you know, in anticipation of speaking with you today, I've been just dropped by a few bookstores, just your average bookstores in an ordinary sort of town, to see how much Kawabata was sitting on the shelves. And, you know, you can find just about any bookstore of, it doesn't even have to be particularly large, and you will find, you know, Kawabata's works available there in paperback. I just walked through the Nagoya train station just a few hours ago, and I dropped into a bookstore attached to a convenience store, you know, where they're mostly selling, you know, soft drinks and sandwiches, and had a little bookstore on the side for people to grab a book to read on the train, and found The Dancing Girl of Izu right there in, you know, among what was only a few hundred or thousand titles in the one store.
Well, did the Nobel Committee cite certain Kawabata novels as a reason for giving him the prize?
They did. They cited Snow Country. Mm-hmm. And also Thousand Cranes, and the other work that was cited was The Old Capital, which I translated. At the time when he won the Nobel Prize, The Old Capital had not appeared in English, but it had appeared in French and German and other European language translations. Snow Country and Thousand Cranes had both been translated by Edward Seidensticker, the late Edward Seidensticker of Columbia University.
And Seidensticker is the reason I started reading Kawabata. I read one, mm-hmm. I can't remember, maybe it was A Thousand Cranes, and then I saw Seidensticker's name on The Sound of the Mountain and The House of the Sleeping Beauties, and I just couldn't get enough of Kawabata. But mm-hmm. Kawabata felt that Master of Go was his best work, didn't he?
He did, and when I hear that, and I've had to respond to that a number of times because it's not one of my favorites, but there's no accounting for tastes, even the tastes of the author himself, I suppose.
Well, it's probably the most Japanese of his works, although he's often been called the most Japanese of writers, because Go is a game that is played mostly in Japan these days. It's been compared mm-hmm. to chess. And I think you have to be pretty well-versed in the game to understand the novel.
Well, I think, I do think, though, that the novel has a value even beyond knowing the game of Go. If one does just understand that Go is a game with a long history that goes back to Korea and back in China, and, you know, that Go is a very deliberate and very, you know, thoughtful sort of game. It's also the only game nowadays, I guess, that a human being can still beat a computer at. human beings can still beat computers at Go because of the subtleties of it. I'm not a follower of Go, and I don't know that much about it. But Kawabata certainly considered that one of his best works. And a lot is made, I think, of the fact that you saw the passing of the old generation to the new generation in that novel, the old master who loses to the young man. And sometimes that's people point to that as Kawabata's concern for the deterioration of traditional Japan and the. But I also think that Kawabata had a flip side as well. He also, was considered somewhat avant-garde and somewhat edgy sometimes in some of his work. And so I don't think that, he necessarily was, as some have said, he was always lamenting the passing of old Japan, because at the same time he seemed quite drawn toward many new things and drawn toward some things a bit more spectacular than you might have expected from someone who was entrenched in old Japan.
Although this seems to be a theme among a number of the Japanese writers of the 20th century, Tanizaki, the tension between Westernization and tradition. You see it in Mishima's writing, even as early as Nagai Kafu. So I guess this was something that intellectuals in Japan thought a lot about. What are we gaining and what are we losing?
That's right. That's right. And I think I think it would be fair to say when the Nobel Committee awarded the prize to Kawabata, they talked about the old capital as being a lamentation of the passing of old Japan. But I have to say that you could hardly view it strictly as a lamentation, because at the same time, the characters are drawn toward beautiful things and enticing things that are Western or new. And you find the old, the father in the old capital, who is a kimono designer, who himself wishes that Japanese would quit using European language words to describe colors. When he said, we can describe colors in Japanese, we don't have to call this new deep black, we don't have to call it buraku. Mm-hmm. we can use a Japanese word for it. But at the same time, he took books of paintings by Paul Klee and Gauguin and such to a convent temple in order to inspire himself to make a more beautiful Japanese design. And so there's a great deal of ambivalence. And I think if you look at Nagai Kafu, Nagai Fukafu often, was quite enamored of all things French. And, this is a kind of ambivalence that I think most anyone can recognize. Our feelings are hardly pure and 100% in one direction. And I think if you recognize that, that the Japanese can be just as ambivalent as anyone else might be. I think that's a good way to start reading these works, like Kawabata and other writers like Tanizaki. I think often as Western observers of Japan, we often want simple definitions. Ah, they are lamenting the loss of the old Japan. Well, there's more to it than that, and it's a lot more complex and a lot more different countervailing forces involved.
Kawabata used the term Shinkan Kakuha to describe his philosophy, which has been translated into English as Neo-Impressionism. Is that an accurate translation?
That's a mistranslation. Because the word, the impressionism, the shin kankakuha doesn't mean, shin is what is usually translated as neo. So it's not a reinterpretation or a reinvention or a revisioning of Impressionism. It is an ism that is interested in new impressions.
But is it a description of what he's trying to do? Because his work is so visual.
Right. It is. And so what Kawabata, I think, was when that term Shinkan Kakuha is, you were looking for something new, something that hadn't been seen before, or something that hadn't ever been noticed. I think in the Snow Country, for example, I think one of the most wonderful scenes in that is when Shimamura looks at the screen on his window, and he sees a moth sitting there, and he watches it for a long time, hoping, waiting for it to move, and then finally he reaches out and taps the screen, and the moth falls down, and he realizes he's been watching a dead moth all along. And the visual power, I think, of just that little image, and it's those small images, I think, that are quite important in Kawabata. I think that's the kind of the new eyes that he wanted to see the world with.
Well, if you were trying to convince somebody to read works by Kawabata, first of all, what would you tell them to read first? Considering the fact that you're a translator and you've translated one of his great books,
read what I've translated, but
The Old Capital has been translated before, so you must have seen a need to retranslate it.
I'm sorry.
What would you want them to look for, and how would you introduce them to Kawabata?
Well, just judging from sales of books and what people have been interested most recently in reading by Kawabata, his Palm of the Hand stories have. Now I translated along with Lane Dunlop. We each did half of a 30 stories each of a book of 70 short pieces of very short fiction by Kawabata, and that came out in 1989, and has stayed in print and keeps selling. And people, these stories are page two. The longest of them are only three or four, five pages long. And somehow these stories seem to resonate with a lot of people. And I think as an entry into Kawabata's work, the Palm of the Hand stories is probably one that at least allows you to sample a lot without having to go too far into a novel that might not appeal to you.
It's been said go ahead.
And many people, I think, point to these as being something like prose haiku. Now, I don't know, that might be too precious a kind of definition of what they are. But these are stories that do seem to stick with a reader, even though they may only be two or three pages long. And these were stories palm of the hand because, well, what does that mean? A story small enough to fit in the palm of your hand, or perhaps it suggests the reading of palms and fate and destiny and those kinds of things. But these stories are, he wrote about 140 throughout his career. And these stories don't take, we don't have recurring characters and such. It's just their length that actually defines them as Kawabata's Palm of the Hand stories. That's what he called them. And I think these are a good entry into Kawabata.
It's been said that the Nobel Prize has led to the suicides of two of Japan's greatest writers, Mishima because he didn't get it, and Kawabata because he did.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still some controversy over whether he actually committed suicide?
Well, there was in his some people close to him, including his wife, didn't think that it was actually suicide; that it might have been simply an accidental gassing. I know one of my professors, who was a friend of Kawabata, felt that way himself. That's hard to say. There's some question. I don't think, though, it's really so much controversy, because at least his suicide, unlike Mishima's, was not anything spectacular or dramatic the way Mishima's was planned and carried out.
Did you read Kawabata first in English or in Japanese?
I read him first in English, and that was thanks to Edward Seidensticker's work, yes.
And would you recommend books like Thousand Cranes, The Sound of the Mountain, The House of the Sleeping Beauties?
My favorite, if I were to recommend one of Kawabata's, would be The Sound of the Mountain, of the novels translated by Edward Seidensticker. I think Sound of the Mountain is filled with the kind of images that we were talking about just a moment ago.
Like the sunflowers.
Yes. Just filled with moments, and I think that's where one has to appreciate Kawabata. It's not so much in the overarching development of a story, but in the small moments that he's able to depict. And I think that's why the palm of the hand stories seem to be sort of his basic unit of composition. You look at The Sound of the Mountain and his longer novels and read them as one little vignette following the next, I think that's where you'll reach and get your greatest satisfaction.
Thank you so much. Jane Martin Holman has translated any number of the works of Yasunari Kawabata, who is the subject of today's underappreciated series. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you so much.